Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
The publication of content on a regular basis tied to your experiences that is aligned with your business and that will generate demand for what you do when people consume that content is the single most important thing that is very, very difficult for you to outsource. But it's something you're going to have to do at some point if you really want to get traction digitally and be able to reap all the benefits that we've talked about on this podcast.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with leadership and business coach Chad E. Cooper and with Megan Lynch of 6 Point Creative, then do check them out. They're wonderful conversations full of value nuggets. But listen to this one first. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Neil Schaefer. Neil is a leading authority on all things social media marketing strategy, on influencer marketing, on social selling initiatives. He's the president of his own social media agency, PDCA Social. Neil also teaches digital media to executives at a number of universities all around the world, including the US, Ireland, and Finland. He's a popular keynote speaker and the author of 4 books on social media, including Maximize Your Social and the recently published The Age of Influence. The books are essentially on educating the market on the why and how every business should leverage the potential of influencer marketing. In our discussion today, Neil talked to me about marketing by partnering with niche influencers. He explained how you can grow your social media presence by building relationships, and we discussed why content assets are so important for your marketing. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Neil Schaefer. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Irvine in California, Neil Schaefer, who's the author of The Age of Influence and a few other books that we might get to later. He's a marketing specialist, a speaker, a consultant, and also founder of PDCA Social. And he's also host of the Maximize Your Social Influence podcast. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Neil. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Oh, the honor is mine.
Now, you've got a really interesting background. You started out, we were just having a conversation about the IT industry and software. You started out in the early days of the software industry in Japan, and you're fluent in Chinese and Japanese, which is quite remarkable. It makes you stand out from other people in your industry, I'm imagining. And 15 years you spent in Asia and launched a blog and then started speaking and started the social media consultancy nearly 10 years ago, I think. How did you kind of make that transition from sales in IT to social media?
Yeah, you know, it was sort of a natural transition because the first, I am, you know, as you hear from my accent, I am American. born and raised here. I decided, though, after university to launch my career in Asia, specifically in Japan, because I had studied abroad in university and studied the languages. And at the time, Japan was the booming economy. So I wanted to launch my career there, and I ended up having a great time staying there for 15 years. Among other things, getting married. And when we had our first child, we decided it was time to move back to the United States. So a few years after that was the first time that I was actually in transition here in the United States. And that's where I became a very, very active user of social media, specifically LinkedIn, because that's all we had as professionals back then. And because I had a very, very specific objective was to build out a local network in the technology industry at the time, I was really leveraging it as a tool that many other people did not think of it as. So I was very active on LinkedIn. They used to have an answers forum, for those that remember. I was very active there. LinkedIn groups weren't as spammy that time. I was very active there. I was actively connecting with other people. And, you know, and after a few months, I ended up getting my job. But at the same time, the day I got the offer letter, I actually launched my blog, which I did on LinkedIn as well. And it was really geared towards LinkedIn, I think the name of it was Expert Advice to Your LinkedIn Questions. It wasn't a very branded approach, but I did that. And it's a really good thing I did that, because this is right before the Lehman Brothers crash back in, it was literally the day that Barack Obama got elected president of the United States, when my boss moved out from Georgia to let me know that they had just decided to just completely disengage from the international market. And I was obviously in charge of APAC sales and business development. So that was really a shocker, 3.5 months after I was hired, to have someone take something away from me. And I know a lot of your listeners are, you know, consultants, and maybe they also started out corporate employees as I did. But when you have that experience, I really wanted to build something that no one can take away from me. And I realized that was my brand. So I started blogging more as a way of really a networking vehicle, getting my name out there. And my wife is like, you should consider writing a book, Neil. And I never really thought about it, but in 2009, it was hard to find that next job, as you can imagine. And I think for me specifically, I had to reinvent myself, because American companies were not looking to hire Americans to manage Asia from America. They could just hire people in Asia. So why go out of your way to hire someone from the United States? So I think, social media came about at a good time, and it just happened organically. I started blogging, I started networking locally, I got invited to speak, and then I got some, I wrote the book, and then I got some consulting opportunities. And in January 2010, that's where I launched it. I never planned it that way, but that's just sort of the path that opened up. And like many other consultants that are listening, I just thought there was a lot more upsell or potential good things from doing it on my own and launching rather than going back to the corporate world. So, and I haven't stopped since then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot to like about that story. And I guess it's, you used LinkedIn as, because you had a need for making those connections when you moved back to the US and you were looking for a job. And then you kind of built on the expertise that you'd taught yourself and learnt through whatever you invested in there, and then started to blog about that. And also the forums, being really helpful on the forums, answering questions, probably gave you a profile there. And then that just, it grew into that opportunity. So it's a classic case of there's a need there that's unfulfilled. And you just, because you had that need yourself and you developed the skills to address it in your own life and in your own business, you then could take it out to others.
Yeah, and it's a classic case. I'm sure a lot of people listening are trying to build thought leadership in their industry. Maybe they are thought leaders, but what I learned from that experience is, at the end of the day, thought leadership comes from content. So before the internet, it came from speaking at conferences or white papers, academic studies, what have you. But with everything digital now, and with coronavirus, clearly we have to be digital first in everything we do as professionals, as a company. Getting content published online, and especially in social media, it brings about it. It naturally leads over time to that sort of thought leadership, as people find your content, engage with your content, start to follow you, see your content again and again and again. And like I said, I didn't plan it that way, but that's what happened. And back in 2009, I self-published my book back in 2009, and there were very few books on LinkedIn back then. There were very few self-published books. There were very few blogs about LinkedIn. Now, you know, content marketing has become this mainstream term. Anybody, it's so easy to self-publish a book now. I almost think that every professional should at some point in their career if they want to build thought leadership. But there's also just a lot more noise out there. I think it's a lot harder. There's a lot more competition, right? A lot more people are creating more content. But that is still my advice for people listening. If they want to sort of get that traction of people reaching out to you, get that inbound traffic coming to you, it really starts with that digital content creation. And a blog is really the best way to do that, I think.
And then you started your podcast as well, so which is more digital content.
Yes. Later on, I started my blog in 2008. I started my podcast 2013. And I podcasted regularly for about 2 years. And then I took my foot off the gas pedal, unfortunately. And really, I'd say Q4 2019, I started really getting back into it and really seeing the benefits that I think I might've been a little bit too early, but like with anything else, you know, consistency is key and long-term is key. And I wish I'd kept going, but at that time I was really doing it just as another content marketing initiative. Just, I felt like I needed to do it. Now I really enjoy it and I'm a consumer podcast and I realize how truly compelling they are. And, you know, there's a lot of blogs out there, but there aren't a lot of podcasts out there. So instead of a blog, a podcast might just be a great vehicle for thought leadership today.
Yeah, well, I'd read somewhere that there was a quote, and I can't remember who to attribute this to. It's probably the famous Anon, that podcasting is the new blogging these days.
Indeed, indeed.
All right, well, you talked about content marketing. You talked about a lot of the noise that's out there, and it's getting more and more noisy and harder to stand out. I think, you know, the important is that your content is actually targeted to the right audience and also that it's really high quality. And I think that, to me, that distinguishes you a little bit as an influencer. You also talk about redefining influencer marketing. You talk a lot about influencer marketing rather than content marketing, which is kind of a term the content marketing's been around for a long time as a term. So tell us a little bit more about influencer marketing. Why is that the kind of next thing? How does that stand out from content marketing as we understood it years ago?
Yeah, so if you think about your options, if you want to approach marketing from a digital first perspective, obviously you need to have a website. So I think we can check that box. You want to be found in search engines. So you want to do search engine optimization for your website, or maybe you want to do paid, you know, Google ads or pay-per-click ads. I think a lot of us already know that. We know that email marketing is still powerful. People still do read emails. And now you have very, very sophisticated technology that allows you to do marketing automation. So these are sort of the old school traditional digital marketing, you know, web, email, search. And email and search are still critically important. But over the last decade, we've seen the emergence of what we call content marketing. Instead of just artificially creating content and linking back to your website, create truly impressive content in your blog, and that's going to help your SEO. In fact, create even better content through podcasts, through YouTube videos, through white papers, or events like webinars, and you can generate leads through your content. And this all sort of encompasses content marketing. So I think we've seen this become mainstream over the last 5 years. And then you have social media marketing, which has now become mainstream. Unfortunately, it's become very pay to play for most businesses. So now we have the aspect of paid social media marketing, which over the last 5 years has become very mainstream. And where influencer marketing fits in is the sixth component of digital marketing. And it's one that becomes more and more important because organic social media, just posting on your LinkedIn company page or on your Facebook profile, what have you, it just doesn't carry the weight that it used to because it has become pay to play. And really, you know, when we thought about social media back in the early days, we thought, wow, this is word of mouth marketing. This is viral marketing. You know, we publish something on Facebook and our friends see it and they engage and their friends see it and it spreads like wildfire. Well, unfortunately, that really doesn't happen today. So if you want people to talk about your company in social media, you either pay for the privilege or you leverage other people to do the talking for you. So if you're a Coca-Cola, if you're a Qantas, people are already talking about you. But if, especially in B2B industries, or if you're in, you know, a startup, or you're maybe not as well known, you need to engage others to talk about you. And that's really where I see the role of influencers. And I don't look at influencers as just being those, you know, beautiful people that are always in Bali or somewhere exotic and they have the perfect picture taken with 10 million followers. An influencer is any social media user that has a degree of influence in the community that you're trying to target. And in the influencer marketing industry over time, they have seen what they call micro influencers, people that have actually fewer or lesser influence, fewer followers, actually perform better. And now they've gone into nano influencers, people that are even more niche. And the definition of a nano influencer in Instagram terms is 1,000 followers to 10,000 followers. So now when I write in the age of influencer, I speak or, you know, work with my clients, how many people do we know that have 1,000 followers, that have 1,000 connections on LinkedIn, that have 1,000 followers on Twitter? And you'd be surprised, there's just a lot more people that have influence out there as it becomes media influence truly becomes democratized over time. So instead of looking for whoever has the most followers, I preach start with people that already know, like, and trust your brand, your business, yourself. Start with your employees. Start with your partners. Start with your customers, right? These are people that already know, like, and trust you. If you were to put together a program, we can call them brand ambassador programs. You can call them whatever you want. You could call it a podcast series where you want to interview these people every week. When you bring these people together, they already know you and there's already incentive to work with you. And it's going to be a long-term relationship where you don't necessarily have to pay them money for a one-time transaction. And this is the problem with reaching out to, you know, well-known influencers. They're celebrities. They are the new media celebrities. And so they'll work with anyone and everyone. They're very expensive. It's a one-time thing, and their followers know that they've been bought. When you work with more niche influencers, they haven't been bought, especially if they're, like I said, if they have brand affinity for you, they probably love to work with you. And I know that a lot of people listening on the B2B side, in the B2B side where we see these influencer collaborations, is not taking a picture to post on Instagram, but it's really in that content itself, right? It's interviews, it's inviting these people to events to speak, and now those are webinars. It's taking advantage of their community to hopefully generate interest in your product. And there's a lot of ways, you know, vis-a-vis content that can be done, but it all starts with tapping into the people that already know you. There's other people as well that are brand affinity, people that follow you on social media that you've never had a conversation with. They're not a customer. Have you ever asked them why they follow you, who they are? And also, if you use a more sophisticated social listening tool for those in marketing out there, that's where you find people that maybe mention you or your company, but they've never followed you or became your customer, but somehow they know of you. So these are also other people. So you begin to create a pool of people. Maybe it's 5, maybe it's 10, maybe it's 20 that you can begin to tap into. And really from there, create the framework of saying, you know what, whenever we have a content initiative, right? We need a quote for our blog, for a press release. We need a speaker for an event. Let's first tap into this community because we know that they're going to work really, really hard for us. And slowly, as we build more influence, we can then branch out to bringing in new ambassadors, new influencers that don't have as much brand affinity, but they see that we've worked with all these other influencers and we've become more trustworthy because of that. So it's sort of a process and it's a different way of thinking about it, but this allows you to truly leverage the power of others. And potentially it's free, right? Maybe you give away free product or a higher tier of product or free consulting hours, whatever it is, but you don't necessarily have to pay money for this privilege. And if you're used to paying money for content, you might be able to get content for free actually. If you're used to paying speakers, so it actually may save you money while deepening a relationship with someone that's very, very important for your company's ecosystem. So I know I talked a little bit at length there, but I needed to get the whole scope out there. So hopefully you begin to sort of, you know, internalize what it means.
Yeah. It's a big sort of picture and complete system. I love it on many levels. I guess the, you know, what you're saying is that it's not about you aiming to become an influencer, although that might be a side effect of it. It's about tapping into people who already have a sphere of influence that, and I guess this is critical. You talked about, you know, the people with big numbers of followers. are very famous and you might have to pay them to speak or to come on your show and so on. And I've experienced that in the past. But at the same time, the people that have a much smaller one, I mean, 1,000 to 10,000 isn't necessarily small, but in the scope of kind of the famous people, it's small. So those people have a niche audience that maybe a much closer match to who you are trying to get in front of, who you can actually help in the long term in terms of leading to business. So that having 1,000 people of whom, you know, 90% would potentially be ideal customers versus a million audience of whom 0.5% or whatever, I haven't done the maths, but would be potential customers, is the first one is probably the more effective use of your energy, time, and cost, right?
Yeah, it comes down to alignment. When you look at that person, is your ideal customer potentially following that person or part of that community? So I like to give this example. When I came out with my book, you know, I could have done influencer marketing. I could have gone up to people with a lot of Instagram followers and say, hold my book, take a photo, and I'll give you $1,000. Or I can actually reach out to people that have reviewed my previous books and say, hey, I'd love to send you a copy. If you find it to be recommendable, I'd love a review, but you know, there's no commitment, but I'd love to send you a copy as a fan. And so it costs me no money except the price of the book and the shipping. But for that $1,000, I'm able to ship this out to 50 people with a much higher chance of getting an Amazon review, which was my main objective actually for working with influencers. Or I can do a search on Amazon for people that have reviewed similar books that actually use their names that I'm actually connected with on LinkedIn. And I found a number of these people, right? And so it all comes down to not just the number of followers, but the audience. So one of my clients, I part of the services I provide as a consultant is a fractional CMO service. So one of my clients is a B2B SaaS startup. And we started the Twitter from zero. So we're at, you know, maybe at the time we were at 70 followers. And there was a company in the industry, they were not a competitor, but they were servicing the same client base with 700 followers joined. So we reached out to them to do our very first webinar. Would you like to join us? They said, sure. So immediately, if they're sharing information about the webinar, they're going to get a lot more coverage than our 70 followers are going to see. You know, there's just a greater chance that we're going to be able to get more attendees. And obviously with every attendee, we get an email address where we get to follow up with them and hopefully, you know, bring them into our community. And if you do this with three different people in a webinar, each one of them having 500 or 200 or 100, it's more than your 70 followers. And it's a different audience. There's probably very little overlap as well. And that's really what it's somewhat a numbers game, but it comes down to that alignment with the community, right? And you should be able to see based on the company and what they're posting, if there is that alignment or not.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So you gave us an example there of when you launched your latest book, you reached out to the people that have reviewed previous books and you sent them your book and said, you know, if you like what you read, I'd appreciate a review. But you made it clear that there was no expectation coming back. What I'm curious about is, you know, what's your recommendation for approaching influencers in general? Because I could imagine that if you just go out and ask and say, you know, can you promote my stuff? It's a little bit one-sided, right?
Indeed. I think, you know, my experience selling, especially in embedded software in Japan, there was always this ecosystem of partners. So the semiconductor manufacturers were partners. You had value-added resellers. You had system integrators. You had other software components that we might plug into. And that, I think it's a really, really good example of the way you need to think about influencers. Where do they fit in your ecosystem? Because at the end of the day, they have to be incentivized, which is why if you start with your customers, your partners, your employees, there is that incentive already in that you're already working together. But if they're not, it really comes down to what we say in sales, WIIFM, or what's in it for me. So if they have no interest in your product or your service or your community, I don't think that they would want to work with you. There's no reason to. So it really starts with a conversation, almost as if you were reaching out to looking for a new distributor or a new reseller, right? We know that you're really well known in the space. We're trying to, you know, we're trying to attack the space. Is there any way in which you think we might be able to work together? Or do you work with other companies? And really, you know, social media is part of it. If they're influential, they might be influential offline as well. So really, you know, do you partner with other consultants or agencies or companies? And how might we be able to work together? And obviously, you can throw out some ideas like, we just launched a new podcast, we'd love to interview you. Or we'd love to interview you for a blog. Or we have a top 10 consulting tips for 2021 blog posts we're writing. Would you submit a paragraph and we'll link back to your website? There's a lot of things that you can give, like a link, like, you know, an appearance on a podcast, on a webinar, what have you. But it really comes down to what are that person's needs. And, you know, you can imagine what their needs might be, but you're never going to know until you have that conversation. And the best way to have the conversation is not to reach out of the blue, but to begin to build rapport over social media. Right? Social media is great for developing relationships. You should use that to your advantage. You should be following that person, commenting on their blog. If you truly think they're an influencer and you truly respect them, why wouldn't you follow them and engage with them in social media? And if they engage back, well, that gives you, you know, it gives you a reason to take the relationship a little bit deeper and say, I've really enjoyed our, you know, your content, our conversations. I wanted to ask you if you ever partner with companies like mine. We'd love to, you know, figure out a way to work together to cross promote each other in social and digital media and have the conversation. That would be my best advice.
Yeah, that's great advice. It comes back to the point that, you know, I often talk with guests around this in on the social media space, where people seem to think that once you connect with them, their first response then is they try to sell you something. It really comes back to, it's called social for a reason. It's actually about building relationships. And when you first connect with somebody, it will be really good to actually look at their content, make some comments about their content, offer to help them in some way, you know, contribute to a conversation before you start selling anything. And then this idea of the influencer marketing approach or partnership approach, of course, isn't selling anything. It's kind of like, can we help each other?
Yeah, you know, I like to say new tools, old rules. There's no shortcuts. Just because you can connect with someone, it doesn't mean it's going to be any easier to sell to them, right? So,
yeah.
And that's why I really enjoy, you know, working with older professionals, because they understand the art of networking, the art of relationship building. And once they realize how to use social media as part of that, they actually become real experts at it really quickly, versus other people who never had those skills and they see social media as a tool. They see that as the tool, as the skill, as if, you know, by automating this, somehow they're going to get business, they're going to get cash flowing out of the, you know, the water faucet, which it doesn't work that way. Especially, you know, a lot of people listening are in B2B industries, especially in B2B, it really is based on those relationships, which, you know, digitally, it can help break the ice and begin to build rapport. But at the end of the day, especially looking back at my time in Japan, there's so much based on face-to-face that even with this pandemic, you know, I really want to get back to Japan, because I know virtually it's just so hard to manage those relationships. And I'm sure a lot of others that are used to going into their clients, you know, on site and working there, I'm sure they feel the same. So that's just relationship building 101. And if you keep that, you know, that old school etiquette in your mind, I think you'll do really well with this advice.
Yeah, I love that. What did you say? New tools, old rules.
Yeah.
I'll have to remember that one. I often say to people, well, if you met somebody in a face-to-face networking event for the first time, and I said to you, hey, I'm Jürgen, and you said, you know, I'm Neil, and my response then was, great to meet you, Neil. I've got this wonderful service that I'd like to talk to you about, and it's only going to cost you this much. Would you do that? Well, no, that is just rude. Well, yeah. Why do you do it on social media?
I got a special on my knife collection. It's normally $4.99. Also, it doesn't work. And in fact, on social media, it gets people to block you. It gets people to potentially share the negative experience with others. You know, take a screenshot, post on their LinkedIn. Can you imagine this person tried to do this? So yeah, you're, and especially, Jürgen, when you work with influencers. So there is something that I use in a lot of my presentations, which is basically a email. Well, it was a letter, and it must have been mass printed, because it after dear, there was a blank space. And they literally wrote in my name. And this was a very, very famous car rental company, like one of the top five biggest car rental companies in the world. And it was an agency, you know, at the bottom, it was a signature of a person, you know, on behalf of the car rental company. But it just struck me the complete wrong way. They just sent me this stuff out of nowhere. This swag that I had no use for. So they wasted a lot of money, and it serves as a bad example when I present on influencer marketing. So the people you don't want to sell to, the people that you don't want to come on strong to, are the people that have influence. I mean, you would be stupid to think otherwise. So yeah, those are the people you really want to practice the best social etiquette with, as you can imagine. As if you were working with, you know, as if you were approaching the CEO of a major enterprise that you want to sell to. It's the same thing.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, in the sort of old days of the corporate world, when I was in the corporate world, you know, one of the things that particularly the sales teams that had the most direct face-to-face interaction with clients, a lot of their time was spent entertaining clients, playing golf with clients, going out to dinner with clients, and all of that was around relationship building. You know, and I remember having conversations with people in the technical departments, saying, "Oh, all these guys in sales and marketing, all they do is play golf and have dinner." And I said, "Well, you know, somebody's got to get to know these people that we then get to talk to." You know, and we benefited from that, because we would then be able to go in and do technical presentations to those people. But we only got to do that because there was a relationship by somebody within our company who was kind of our entry to that forum, if you like.
You know, humans are emotional and irrational people, right? So, you know, my father, may he rest in peace, would still argue that Betamax was superior to VHS. in the best, we were talking, the best technology does not always win, right? So you may have the best product, but if you don't have the relationships, and there's a lot of emotional factors in play, especially when you sell to large organizations, there's politics in play. It does come down to those relationships and being able to leverage other people inside the enterprise to help you navigate through the politics. I mean, it all comes down to relationships, emotions, and what have you. The best, unfortunately, does not always win. So you have to play the game. And I, you know, with me in Asia, it was a lot of alcohol drinking late at night, as you can imagine.
Yes, I remember those days. I used to travel a lot in Asia in my corporate days. Yeah.
But I also think that, especially in Asia, when you do something for someone, they will never forget that. And I have built very lucrative business relationships by making a sacrifice, but knowing that helped that person so much that even if they change companies, they would still want to work with my company. Because once again, it's humans are emotional and irrational. So, you know, that's where I'm a true believer in karma, and I'm a believer in karma in the business world. I've so many deals that I've lost, but I've approached it professionally and said, "I'm still here. Should you need my company?" And then 6 months, 12 months later, they knock back on the door. You know, "You were such a gentleman. We'd love to have a chance to work with you. Here's the opportunity." So that's life. That's business. And I think most experienced, you know, sales professionals out there get that. But there's a reason for why they need to invest their time into those relationships.
Mm. And it comes back to the core message that I keep putting out there, which is, you know, let's make marketing human again. And I guess it applies not just to marketing, it applies to selling and business all around. And the new tools, old rules, right? So with all the automation and the different platforms we have available to us now these days, people kind of forget that the relationship thing is still fundamentally key to, you know, underpinning all of the interactions.
Yeah. And it's also, I know that I've been doing a lot of talking in this podcast, but it's actually doing more listening than talking, right? Yeah. When you approach influencers, actually, and in sales, it's the same thing. It's being able to understand the issues that people have and seeing how you or your company or you as a professional can help them. And it's just, it's a basic tenet that I think a lot of people just forget about because of social media.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the structure of this podcast is kind of a conversation, and as the host, I get to listen more than my guests.
Sure.
All right. Well, this has been fabulous, Neil. I mean, I can keep asking questions and having more conversation around this whole idea of relationships online and how to use these tools and still keep the relationship thing in mind. But I think we've got a really good picture of the idea of influencer, and I've got lots of ideas I'm going to go away with here. And I'm aware of the time. So I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And Right. It's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Let's do it.
Are you all set? What do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think they need to get into a deeper relationship with their customers and listen to them more. I think innovation comes from providing solutions to the problems that people and businesses have. And therefore, the only way to innovate is really to unlock what those issues, what those problems are.
Yeah, I love it. Deepening the relationship with the customers, understanding them better, and then you discover problems that you may not be aware of, and that gives you the opportunity to innovate.
Absolutely.
Love it. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I have done the same thing. And I think in relation to that, I've also kept a very, very open mind. I am also a consultant, like a lot of the listeners, and there are many, many ways to monetize your intellectual property and your experience. And in situations like COVID-19, you also have to learn how to innovate. So I have several different revenue streams. I'm an author, I'm a speaker, I teach at a few universities, I'm a fractional CMO, I have an agency, and it's always understanding where the market is going according to what I see from my own customers, and seeing, you know, what that future, you know, always looking at where the revenue is coming from, where it's going, what are those trends, and then finding ways of innovating in that so I can maximize my revenue as a company, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's great. So diversify from the point of view of where you're listening, where you're bringing ideas and thought starters, I guess, in, but also diversify that you're able to adapt to challenging situations like COVID, and diversify so that your income stream and everything is solid as well.
Mm. Yeah, here in the United States, you know, I post stay safe, and I'll have somebody, you know, oh, small businesses are dying and you want us to stay at home. I said, look, I'm a small business. I'm doing awesome because I'm pivoting. You know, my brother's a winemaker in California. He had to close his wine tasting room. But you know what he found? He found corporations that are now doing virtual wine tastings with their executives for employee. He's starting a new business out of this, right? So the innovators are understanding where the problems are, finding opportunities and pivoting. And that's just such a critical thing with COVID-19, that if you're not pivoting, if you're not offering things more virtual or providing other extra value-added services, you know, I had to pivot my whole career 12 years ago. and we have all had to. So it's such a critical thing to be nimble. In Chinese, there's a term called linghuo. And it's something which when I mentioned this to a Chinese professional recently, he goes, oh, that's agile. But you know, they were saying linghuo when I was working in China in the 90s, you know, way before we said the word agile. It's been part of their flexible way of looking at business and life. And that's something that I wish that I think every business, every professional needs today.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I mean, I so love the virtual wine tasting. We've got wineries doing that here in Australia as well. And, you know, you can get on a Zoom call. You basically buy a ticket to the Zoom call. You can optionally actually have those wines delivered to your home in advance of the tasting. And then you'll get a guided wine tasting through each of the wines. The winemaker will be there explaining the background. So for somebody that's interested in wine, like I am, big transparency here, but you get that whole experience of learning about the wine, of speaking, and then there's obviously Q&A for the people to ask the winemaker and the vineyard, whoever else might be there, vineyard staff questions. And so it's a fabulous experience. I mean, obviously, it's missing that direct atmosphere of being in the wine cellar itself. But given the restrictions that we have today, I think it's a great example of how, you know, a business that is reliant on people being in the store have been able to kind of come up with another idea. And it gives them the opportunity then to reach out to people that would never have the ability to travel to their winery and actually taste their wines. Now, all of a sudden, they can reach out all across the world through the internet.
And, you know, it happened. There was an event company that reached out to my brother. They do events and they're doing a virtual event with, you know, would they'd like him to take part as a winery and do a wine tasting. And then someone from the wine industry who specializes in events reached out to him. And this, over the course of 2 to 3 weeks, he started to see a pattern emerge. So now he's going on a LinkedIn, creating a B2B profile to reach out to, you know, executives in HR that are in charge of employee engagement. And putting together packages on his own. And it all happened because he was listening and seeing that opportunity develop and then pivoting so he could service that opportunity. And it's something I think that anybody can really emulate once they see the opportunities develop.
Mm, great. All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
My brain.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think, you know, critical thinking is so important, that there's a lot of things you can find on the internet or read books or listen to podcasts. I listen to, there's about 10 podcasts that I subscribe to. They're all, you know, digital social media marketing related. I listen to them religiously every week. But for me, it's when I'm in the car listening to podcasts that I tend to do a lot of open thinking, which leads me to a lot of innovative ideas. So so maybe I would say podcast is, but it's also just having that free time away from the computer where I actually have time to breathe and think. And on the freeways here in Southern California, driving, you know, 120 kilometers an hour down the freeway, it on cruise control, it gives me time to think in a weird way. So yeah, that would be my answer.
Yeah, I love listening to podcasts or audio books when I'm driving or commuting, although it's kind of with COVID, of course, I haven't been doing much driving or commuting for some time. But what the other thing I do, a lot of bike riding for exercise, and we used to go out in groups every morning. That's kind of stopped with COVID now. So I go out on my own. I put on my headset there when I'm on my own and listen to podcasts there. And I find that's the my switch off time, and I often come back with heaps of ideas and inspiration.
I consider podcasts like brain food. They absolutely nourish my brain, and it's almost like I build extra tissue when I'm listening to podcasts with all the ideas that flow. Maybe because I've always loved music and I played music growing up, and what have you. Maybe you yourself were audio people, but I definitely find that to be the case with podcasts.
Yeah, great. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Well, I want to say time management, but time management really comes down to prioritizing. It also comes down to how you manage the expectations of that client at the get-go.
Hmm.
So it's always about over-delivering. It's always about managing the expectations so that you have that buffer, knowing that you're always going to be able to deliver above and beyond what you promise, but things do happen. You get extra clients that sign on. You get emergencies that happen in your business. So having that buffer, it's like I'm doing a revision of, I have a free book called Maximizing LinkedIn for Business. And I have a client who I do some training with. And in the contract, I promised them every year I'm going to provide them a revised version. So the next version is due July 9th. And so I'm working to make sure that is done by June 30th, way in advance. But I bought myself time. Originally, they said, we want you to finish it by July 1st. I said, no, I'm going to need a little bit more time. So, you know, the project management's all at the get-go when you give projected timelines and you listen to requirements, right? If you can manage expectations there and build in that buffer, that has been the secret to how I've been successful.
Yeah, that's great advice. And then When you do that, I find sometimes it's a good idea if you sort of make that negotiation from July the 1st to July the 9th, that in your own mind, you stick to the July 1st deadline, because then when procrastination kicks in or when something else gets in the way, at least you've got that buffer, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Now, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves as a, now in your case, as a social media marketer that speaks fluent Mandarin and Japanese and lives in the US?
I think that you have to, and what I've learned over time is that the definition of a brand and the way you differentiate yourself is through branding. So branding, and I'm not a branding expert by any means, but branding is sort of consistency of look and feel and of your content, but it's also differentiation, right? There's something different about you that should showcase your expertise, your experience. So I was very moved when Steve Jobs passed away. And there was that video of him speaking at Stanford University's graduation speech, where he talks about connecting the dots of your past. And I became very passionate about doing that with my own past, realizing that, yes, the fact that I do speak those languages, it's part of me, and I should use that to my advantage. The fact that I sold, that my background is more on the sales side than marketing side is not a disadvantage, it's an advantage, and I should speak to that. So it's really about connecting the dots and bringing out those unique things that are you, bringing them out into who you are when you describe yourself, when you describe the services that you provide. You know, PDCA Social stands for Professor Edwards Deming, PDCA Cycle, which I learned in Japan working at the semiconductor manufacturer. Even though I was in sales, we all had to apply that to everything we did in our work. And I found it very, very applicable to social media marketing strategy. It's also realizing that, you know, my father, may rest in peace, was an educator. And probably the fact that when I consult, I like to teach, that is also part of me, this educator DNA. He was also an entrepreneur, another part of my DNA. So connect the dots to your past and bring them out in your present is really the best advice I can give there.
Great. Well, we had Megan Lynch on the last episode of the podcast. She's a branding expert, and she talked quite a bit about being really self-aware about where, you know, where you're coming from and what your own journey has been and what your expertise is and how you help, but then about the clarity and consistency of everything, every touch point with the client. So I think that kind of reinforces what you're talking about there in terms of branding.
Phew.
All right. Well, thanks, Neil. This has been absolutely wonderful. Now, where can people find out more about you and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared today?
Well, I am Neil Schaefer, the real Neil. So it's N-E-A-L, S-C-H-A-F-F-E-R. You know, neilschaefer.com, Neil Schaefer everywhere on social media. I do have the podcast, Maximize Your Social Influence. And my book, The Age of Influence, as well as my other books are available everywhere where books are sold, online and in bookstores. So I'm pretty easy to find once you spell my name right.
Yeah, great. And we'll have links on the show notes page so that people don't have to remember how to spell it. And hopefully they'll make it easy for you to click straight through.
Thank you.
All right. So do you have a parting piece of advice for our listener today, Neil?
I think that, you know, we talked about a lot of different things that I think are really important for your audience. I think at the end of the day, if we want to become digital first, I think the most important piece in that is content. Because whether you're writing, you know, I always talk about, what does digital first mean? Well, what are people doing when they're online? They're either searching for information, they're reading emails, or they're in social media. So if you want to engage in any one of these three areas, you need content. And if you just have a website, I'm not saying you have to have a podcast or a YouTube channel per se, but if you love to talk and you love to interview people, a podcast is a great way to get started. If you do a lot of speaking and you love video, launch a YouTube channel. If you're a writer or you have a lot of written information, a blog is a great way to do it. If you're a photographer, go get on Instagram. Whatever it is, I think the publication of content on a regular basis tied to your experiences that is aligned with your business and that will generate demand for what you do when people consume that content is the single most important thing that it is very, very difficult for you to outsource, but it's something you're going to have to do at some point if you really want to get traction digitally and be able to reap all the benefits that we've talked about on this podcast. So there's a lot of different tactics and strategies you can do, but be thinking about that and try to start, you know, whatever content medium you have a passion about, try to bring together all the PowerPoint presentations, the speeches, you know, whatever content, whatever descriptions you've written, whatever FAQs you have, try to bring that all together and really take asset of all or take inventory of all the content assets you have and really try to create a content strategy to start to implement over the next 3 to 6 months would be my best advice if that's the direction you want to go. And I think you should go because that's really the future really is in digital more and more.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. And I'll have to listen back to the recording of your answer there because I think it's a very compelling case for why people should be producing content. And a lot of people I speak to from time to time, I get a little bit of pushback. Well, I'm not a good writer or I'm not a good this. But you know, one of the things you've highlighted there is there's a whole lot of different forms that content could take from audio to visual in the form of video or photography, or even painting if you're an artist, sketching, sketch notes. I mean, I'm following a couple of sketch noters, they're called at the moment, because I find that quite fascinating how people can take notes in the form of a one-page sketch and encapsulate the essence of a one-hour talk in that one page. So that, you know, there's a whole lot of different forms of content. So great advice.
And yeah, Jürgen, just to simplify it, in the 90s, if someone wanted to get information, if the Sonys, the Samsungs, the Huaweis wanted information on the semiconductors that my Japanese company sold, they had to go through a salesperson. And the salesperson had to validate that they were speaking to a person at the right level. And all the client wanted to get was access to our engineer, to get access to the information, to the demonstration, to be able to ask questions. And we would only bring the engineer to that company because we had to do it in person, only when we validated these things. So today, what's happening? People are searching online. And if they're finding your competitor's information, they're not giving you a call. So it is a completely different paradigm than what it used to be just a generation ago. Yeah. And you really need to, the only way to adapt is to get your content out there. So what, when your prospective client is searching for that information, they find you and not your competitor. And everybody is doing it. Do a search for keywords related to your core business. See who pops up. I shouldn't need to convince you. You should be able to see that. Do a search on Twitter. Do a search on LinkedIn. If you haven't done that, I think you're going to be in for a little shock. If no one else is doing it, well, it's your opportunity to really be the pioneer in your industry and to really segment, you really, you know, plant your foot to be the leader both offline and digitally. But either way, at some point, you got to get content out there.
Yeah, that's a great little tip there. Go and do a search for what your clients might be searching for online. See what you find. All right. Well, finally then, Neil, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Boy, you know, when I think of innovation, you know, after Steve Jobs, I really think of Elon Musk. Politically, he's sort of all over the place. You know, SpaceX, Tesla, you know, the innovative mind is pretty incredible. And he would be an incredible person if you had a chance to interview him to ask about what he's doing. Because we see things like, I look at Slack and it's like, okay, I see the evolution, but it's not a complete different. When you hear about the latest SpaceX technology or, you know, iPhone was the same. Back in Japan at the time, iMode was the big thing. And people were like, who's going to carry around the big phone with a big battery? And all of my customers were trying to build phones that were cheaper so that they could make more profit, right? So they wanted less powerful semiconductors, smaller batteries, things that use less energy. And Steve Jobs said, no, this is the default. People want the PC experience on a phone. We're going to have x86 processors, or we're going to have, you know, however gigs of memory. It was just a completely opposite mindset. And I think Tesla's the same. Why go hybrid when the technology is there to build a car big enough to be able to house a battery big enough to be able to give you the speed and performance that you would expect? So that's where I see the parallel with those two. And that's why I think it would be really fascinating to find what makes him tick.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see what we can do there. He has been on my list for some time. You're the second person in the last three episodes that suggested I have Elon on. So, Elon, you won't be listening to this, but in case you are, we're coming to get you. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your wisdom and insights with us so generously today, Neil. This has been an absolute blast and I've really enjoyed it. I've got lots of notes here that I need to process. I wish you all the best for the future and let's stay in touch.
Indeed. I've had a lot of fun. And there's a lot of similarities between you and your audience and in my experience. So I truly hope this has been beneficial to many and I hope that they'll reach out to you and me and we are able to help a lot of people through this podcast.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative, engaging conversation with Neil and took something away from his episode that maybe you can even turn into an action today. I love his relationship-based approach to social media and to marketing in general. No surprises there if you're a regular listener. I loved his new tools, old rules quote as well. In fact, I'm going to steal that. I'm curious to know what you took away from Neil's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Neil Schaefer. That is NEALSCHAFFER. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Neil Schaefer. Now there you'll find contact information for getting in touch with Neil, as well as links to his website, his social media pages, the Maximize Your Social Influence podcast, and his book, The Age of Influence, as well as his other books and the other resources that we spoke about in today's conversation. Neil suggested that we have a conversation with Elon Musk on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. That's the second recommendation to get Elon on for a chat in the last three episodes. So, Elon, watch out for some contact from me to start that conversation. Tune in again to the next episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Maxine Cunningham of Pick My Brain and Jeffrey Madov of Madov Production. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.